How's everybody doing today? That was a little weak. How's everybody doing today? Good, good, good. I think you're with me this morning. I'll just keep rolling, even if that's not the case. Hey, I'm glad to have you here. My name is Sten. I'm the pastor here at Mid-Current Church. If this is your first time, we're so glad to have you here. We're a church. This is kind of blows my mind sometimes. We're a church that's not even really a year old yet. That's crazy for me to think about. Not even a year old yet, and yet we're still so excited about some of the things that have been happening, the faces that we see here on a Sunday morning. And we're really excited for each new layer that we will continue to build on this church, each new layer in the future of the life of this church. In these early days, again, not even a year old, in these early days, that primary layer, that foundation is kind of what you're a part of here on Sunday morning. And so we're thrilled that you would be here with us, thrilled that you could be a part of what it is that we are building right here in the St. Croix River Valley area. We're starting a brief series today, just kind of a brief summer series today. It's called Love Like Jesus. That's the goal, right? I would say for our lives as followers of Jesus, for our lives as people who are just even curious or interested about what following Jesus is about. This is it, right? This is the key for our lives. The attractiveness of our lives, the impact of our lives, the influence of our lives really comes down to how well we love one another. Remember, it's this way we're supposed to treat one another in community and in neighborhoods and places together. And it's the way that the world around us is supposed to understand God's love for them because they would see it in us, right? So this is really what it's all about, what it comes down to love like Jesus. Honestly, in my opinion, it's simple in theory, love like Jesus. It's simple in theory, and yet sometimes it's harder in reality. You all know that to be true. Sometimes it's harder in reality to really love people well, let alone to love like Jesus, if that's the goal in some kind of way. So that's what we want to take a couple weeks to talk about, how we do this, to make this a little more tangible for us, to make this maybe even a little bit more doable, possible in our everyday lives. In my opinion, one of the hardest places to love like Jesus, if that's the goal, one of the hardest places to do this is in relationship with one another, particularly in relationship with one another, particularly when there is a conflict brewing or where there is a difficult conversation that we need to have. So I think it's one of the hardest places to really love well when there's some kind of conflict brewing and there's some kind of difficult conversation that we need to have. Over the last 5 years, honestly, when people have come to me in the days when I had an office, right, when people would come to my office or when they would call me or would they be asking for my advice on something, generally speaking, not every time, but generally speaking, it all boiled down to the same thing, right? People who were calling me, people who were coming to my office, people who wanted my advice on something, it was really all boiling down to the same thing. There was a situation brewing somewhere in life. Right? There was some kind of hard conversation that needed to be had. There was a conflict growing somewhere, and there was a concern. People were coming to see me because there was a concern that there was you know, no way forward. Right? I don't know how to handle this. I don't know what to say next. I don't know what to do next, right? Generally speaking, this is what you could boil it all down. People call me, people come to see me, people schedule an appointment with me, some kind of conflict, some kind of hard conversation, and people are coming and saying, I don't know what to do next. It seems like there is no way forward, really, right? It was husbands and wives coming in expressing challenges in their marriage, really not knowing what to do next, not knowing what step to take next. It was men and women, just expressing concern for close friendships that had gone sideways, in some way things had gotten kind of funkies, boundaries had been crossed, hurtful things had been said or done, and these people are wondering, man, like, is this salvageable? I mean, is there hope for this? I mean, what do I do? What do I say? How do I proceed next? Right, it's moms and dads trying to figure out tension with their kids, either young or old. It's families, trying to navigate family tension. Professionals maybe trying to sort out hard conversations they have to have at work. Like, man, how do I do this? How do I have this conversation. I get this stuff all the time. And really, the common denominator, I'd say, in all these scenarios, or all these people that are coming to me from all different places, all different walks, the common denominator in all these scenarios, this has just been my experience in the past couple years, the common denominator is that in all these situations, people are feeling like stuck. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to say next in the midst of this conflict, in the midst of this hard conversation. They don't know what to say next. Either they're going, well, either I'm kind of letting this go. Either I'm letting this go, you know, what was wrong or what was hurtful or what was out of bounds. Either I'm just kind of letting it go. Or I'm speaking up and I risk offending them. I risk losing them as a friend. I risk jeopardizing the relationship, right? And neither seems like a good option, right? So the situations that people are coming to me, I think they're coming because they're feeling like, man, it feels like a lose-lose situation, right? In these situations that I think we've all experienced, we start to feel trapped. We're going, man, my hands are tied. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say next. You ever been stuck in a situation like that? Anybody? Ever had a hard conversation that you've had to have like that? Maybe you're in a situation right now. Maybe you're literally right now, you know, in the middle of or are on the front end of having a hard conversation. Maybe it's with a spouse. Maybe it's with a coworker. Maybe it's with a neighbor, right? And, you know, it's the property line and the dog and this stuff. I don't know what it is, right? Maybe it's an in-law. Maybe it's a close friend. Some kind of problem has popped up. Attention is rising somehow, and you don't know how to address it. You don't know how to speak to it. You don't know how to speak up about it. You don't know what to say in the middle of this conflict, in the middle of these hard conversations. If you're anything like me, or if you're anything, I think, like the people coming to see me, coming to ask for my advice on these kind of situations, if you're anything like me, anything like these people, I think what you want, what you're hoping for, what you're hoping someone can provide for you in the midst of that hard conversation is a script. Right? You're hoping that you could go talk to someone who could hand you a script for what to say next, for how to have this kind of hard conversation. When there's a hard conversation that needs to happen, when there's some kind of conflict, there's some kind of tension, when there's something that was out of bounds that needs to be addressed, you just want a script. You want to know what to say and what to do next. And so here's what I want to try to do this morning. In just the time that we have together this morning, I want to give you that script. Okay, we're going to take a look at a story here that's written about in the book of John. And as we do, we're going to uncover and we're going to discover this script. And I want to give it to you. Everyone's going to get to take home this script today. You get to take it home with you, every one of you. So that's a good thing, right? Jesus is the one that wrote this script, we'll actually discover here. It's pretty basic. He's the one that wrote it. And it's the same script. I really believe this to be true. It's the same script. It's the same kind of outline. It's the same blueprint that you will need for every hard conversation that you need to have, whether it's one that you're in the middle of right now or whether it's one that's brewing or whether it's one that comes out of nowhere that you never saw coming. I want to give you the script that I think is the script that you need for every one of these hard conversations. So if you want to know what that script is, if you want to uncover it, if you think that might be helpful, then what I'd love to have you do is look with me at John chapter 8, because this script for you and me, it all unfolds right there. Really quickly here, in this scene of John chapter 8, Jesus, he's actually kind of forced into this hard conversation, right? Jesus wasn't necessarily in the midst of any kind of, you know, like personal conflict or personal hard conversation of his own. He's actually kind of forced into, he's kind of pushed into this kind of hard conversation that we're talking about. He's pushed into the middle of this conflict. It's actually his enemies. That's maybe not the right word exactly, but his you know, the people that aren't all about what he's doing, right, his enemies, whatever, they kind of set him up. They kind of set a trap for him to force him into this kind of lose-lose situation that I've been describing here, that we often find so many of ourselves in. We find ourselves in these situations. They force him into it. They push him into this lose-lose situation, and they're trying to make him choose, right? They're trying to make him choose between God's law or God's love, right? That's so often the kind of the choice more or less that we're facing, kind of like what's right and wrong, what was in and out of bounds, and how do we love people well. So this is, they're trying to force him, they're trying to set up a trap for him to make this decision, right? Is it about choosing God's law or choosing God's love? So this is what it's all about. It's John chapter 8. We'll take a look together. It says this, verse 1. It says, Jesus returned to the Mount of Olives, but early the next morning, he was back again at the temple, and a crowd soon gathered, right? This was always the case when Jesus was out in the town and teaching, right? This guy was irresistible for so many different reasons, and so people flocked to him, right? So it says, a crowd soon gathered, and he sat down and he taught them. And as he was speaking, the teachers of the religious law and the Pharisees, these are like the religious cops. These are like the religious police, right? The teachers of the law and the Pharisees, they brought a woman to him. They brought a woman who had been caught in the act of adultery, and they put her in front of the crowd. Teacher, they said to Jesus, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. And they inform Jesus, as if he doesn't know, they inform him, the law of Moses, this is the law of the Old Testament, the law of their people. They say, the law of Moses says to stone her. What do you say? Verse 6, it says this, they were trying to trap him into saying something they could use against him. They said, hey, the law of Moses says to stone her. Jesus, what do you say? They're like, this is what I was talking about. This was just an ugly setup by these guys to try to back Jesus into a corner where they assumed there was no good outcomes. These accusers, the truth is, when you kind of look into the story, they actually didn't really care about the woman. They didn't care about the choices that she was making. They didn't care about the kind of, you know, problem that she had found ourselves in. She was just a tool. She was just a tool for them to corner Jesus. So they're saying, hey, we don't really care, but we just want to use you and your story and whatever you got going on here to try to trap Jesus. Because the thing is, ever since Jesus showed up on the scene, he had always claimed, when he began his ministry, he had always claimed to be totally full of love and forgiveness for all people. He always claimed to be totally full of love. And at the same time, he always claimed to have come and to be totally committed to following and to upholding God's law. Right? He had always said this, hey, I'm here to love people radically and I'm here to uphold God's law. But most believed that these two couldn't exist together, right? Especially these kind of religious leaders. It was like, you know, it was either you're about God's law or you're about, you know, love and forgiveness. But they had a hard time understanding how these two things went together. And so they're not buying it that Jesus is saying, hey, yeah, I love people fully and I'm all about forgiveness and I'm here to totally uphold God's law. They're not buying it. And so they try to catch him red-handed. That's what's happening here, right? That they're going, okay, if he doesn't address the issue, right, we caught this woman, so they're going, okay, if he doesn't address the issue, then clearly he's not as committed to God's law as he says he is. And on the other hand, if he permits her stoning, if he says, okay, sure, go ahead, that's what the law says, then he clearly is not committed to loving people. He's clearly not committed to the forgiveness of sins as he claims he is. So they think they've got him. They've got this trap that they think, man, there's no way out of this for him. There's no way forward. And I know the circumstances are different for this story and for our own lives, but I think this is the predicament that so many of us find ourselves in these conversations and these situations that I'm describing. I think this is the problem. Either we don't stand up or speak up, we don't stand up for what's right or wrong or what's been done to us, or we don't love people well. Right, I think that's the balance, right? We don't love people like we're supposed to, so we don't know what to do. We get kind of paralyzed. We're going like, whoa, like, I kind of want to say something. I kind of want to speak up. I think, you know, something needs to be said here, but what do you say? How do you do it? I don't want to be hurtful. I don't want to risk losing them as a friend. I don't want to jeopardize this relationship. I don't want to make them feel bad, right? So we get stuck. We get paralyzed not knowing what to do. But here's the thing, Jesus isn't paralyzed by this little trap. He's not paralyzed by this corner that he's kind of been backed into, and he's not stopped in his tracks. Here's how he responds. We'll keep reading. It says, but Jesus stooped down, right? So they call him out and say, hey, Jesus, what do you say? And it just says this, that Jesus stooped down. He doesn't even answer right away. He just stooped down and he wrote in the dust with his finger. He's taking his time. And it says, they kept demanding an answer, so he stood up again, and he said, all right. They said, Jesus, she's been caught. They say we're supposed to stone her. What do you say? Finally, he says, all right. But let the one who has never sinned throw the first stone. And then it says he stooped down again, and started to write in the dust. I love this, that end part there. This isn't the main focus of what I wanted to say. That I think it's worth noting, though, that Jesus isn't like all worked up about this whole ordeal. Right? He's taking his time. He's calm. He's thoughtful. He's just letting them sit and wait, letting them worry. He's just scribbling around in the dust as he gathers his thoughts. Maybe I think so many of us, when we're in these situations, when we're in the middle of conflict, when there's a hard conversation, man, we get so worked up about it. Right? It's the only thing that's on our mind. It's the only thing we can talk about. It's the only thing that comes up in conversation with close friends. It's the only thing that we can care about or talk about with other people. We're so worked up about it that it comes out of us all sideways. Right, it comes out of us in weird places like Facebook, right? We make vague and subtle and passive-aggressive statements on Facebook about the problems we're having, right? My neighborhood has an awesome, I've laughed with some of you about this. My neighbor has an awesome Facebook group. If you're in my neighborhood and you've ever posted here, I'll just apologize from the beginning, but it's awesome to see the way that people like write about conflicts or problems they're having with people in the neighborhood. All these subtle passive aggressive statements about like, I guess we all need a reminder about the XYZ, or seems like people have forgotten that, you know, blah blah blah, the dogs and the fences and the blah blah blah. It's so incredible just to see how these things just get all worked up inside of us, and it's the only thing that we can think to do, and in this conflict and this tension, it comes out of us in all these kind of sideways ways. Yeah, it's really unbelievable to see this stuff unfolding. But here's the thing, right? Jesus didn't have Facebook, and he wouldn't have needed it anyway. It wouldn't have mattered. Dude's as cool as a cucumber, right? That this stuff isn't coming out of him all sideways. He doesn't need places to kind of get it out in passive-aggressive ways. The dude is as cool as a cucumber in responding to them. He takes his time. He's writing in the dirt, making them wait. But here's the thing, right? He's calm. He's cool. He's making them wait, but he's not a pushover. His slow and his measured response and his, what I kind of picture in my mind is these soft-spoken words to him, they're not taken lightly. Look at how the crowd responds. They finally get him to speak up, and he says, all right. He's taking his time. They get him to speak up. He says, all right, go ahead. But let the one of you who's never sinned, you throw the first stone. So here's how they respond. It says, when the accusers heard this, this is the very next verse, when the accusers heard this, what happened? They slipped away, one by one, beginning with the oldest, until only Jesus was left in the middle of the crowd with the woman. See what happened here? They call him out, and Jesus says, okay, fellas. He says, you want to uphold the law? Great. It's awesome. I wish more people were like you guys, want to take God's law seriously. Good. He says, all right, fellas. You want to uphold the law? Wonderful. Whoever of you has done that perfectly to this point, go ahead and fire away. You throw the first one. And then all of a sudden, these guys realize, whoops, joke's on us. And one by one, they start to slip away, looking at each other like, are you going to throw the stone? I'm not throwing the stone. Are you going to throw the stone? I can't throw the stone either. And so they walk away. And now, here's what I want us to zero in on, right? We're going to zoom in just a little closer here. Here's what I want us to zero in on. Here's where this script, here's where this outline, here's where this blueprint for you and for me starts to unfold. Now, in the middle of the crowd, it's just Jesus and this woman. And the big question is, now what? There's obviously, right? Jesus didn't go looking for it. He didn't stir it up. But it's just Jesus and this woman. And there's obviously a hard conversation that must be had. And Jesus does it brilliantly. Watch and listen carefully, and then we'll kind of unpack it together. It says this, then Jesus stood up again, right? He was down scribbling in the dirt. Now it's just him and the woman. It says this, then Jesus stood up again and said to the woman, where are your accusers? Don't even one of them condemn you? No, Lord, she said. And then Jesus said to her, neither do I. Now go and sin no more. Okay, so this last verse here, Jesus said to her, neither do I go and sin no more. This is it, folks. This is the script for us. This is what I want us to unpack, because tucked behind this response, right, hidden literally just beneath these eight short words, neither do I now go and sin no more, tucked behind these eight words is the script for us that's found in just two of the most powerful forces that I think influence our ability to love like Jesus did, because he did it like none other. That's why people are drawn to him, right? He was able to love people like none other. And so tucked behind these eight words here are two of the most powerful forces that we'll see that influence greatly our ability to love like Jesus. And I want you to know what they are this morning. And so I'll just put them up here on the screen. Those two forces, the two words that end up being the script that you and I need are grace and truth. It's grace and truth. I want us to see how we land on those, right? Jesus tells this woman in this final part of the scene here, Jesus tells this woman, who I should clarify, we should be clear about this, she was guilty, right? She was, I don't know how this happened, but she was caught, the Bible says, in the act of adultery, right? She was caught in the act of unfaithfulness. She was guilty, but Jesus tells her, I don't condemn you. Right, he says, I don't hang you out to dry. That's grace in his response to her. I don't condemn you. I'm not going to hang you out to dry here in front of all these people. This woman in that moment, face to face with Jesus, she doesn't get what the law says that she deserved. That's grace. Jesus says, I don't condemn you. And at the same time, here's the second thing, right? At the same time, if we really think about it, Jesus is, he still kind of calls it like he sees it. He's not afraid to, he's not afraid to call a spade a spade. He's not afraid to call something out of bounds. He's not afraid to identify, this activity of hers for what it is. A sin. He says, now go and sin no more. He's not afraid to call it what it is, a sin. That's truth. Not being able to, not being afraid to say what is, what's wrong, what's out of bounds. He says, go and sin no longer. He doesn't say, hey, I don't condemn you. I'm not going to punish you. But because who am I to judge? He doesn't say, hey, that's no harm, no foul. He doesn't say, well, hey, your personal life, none of my business. He doesn't say, well, hey, we'll just pretend this didn't happen. We'll just keep this between you and me, okay, no big deal. No, he calls it what it is. He says, I don't think that's God's way. I don't think that's God's ideal. I don't think that's God's best for you. But he says, I don't condemn you, but go and live like this. No longer. It's grace and it's truth. I don't condemn you, but this isn't what God wants for you. It's grace and truth. And this story then, it's just a short little story in John chapter 8 here. This story captures incredibly both the gracious and the forgiving spirit of Jesus, and at the same time, his firm call to the transformation of life, his firm call to truth, to calling it like it is, that literally sets you free. He's not, 50-50. He doesn't gauge each situation and kind of go like, yeah, we'll go 60-40 here. With this one, we'll go 70-30, right? He's full parts truth, and he's full parts grace all the time. And I think that's what makes him so stunning. I think that's what makes him so captivating, so irresistible to people who encounter him. It's like nothing they've ever seen. It's like nothing they've ever encountered before. His ability to love people was literally like none other. And so what we learn is this, that if we want to love like Jesus, if that's a goal for you, if that's a goal for me, if that's something we're shooting for, if we want to love like Jesus, then we have to learn to speak grace and truth like Jesus. when we're in relationship with one another, when we're in conflict with one another, when there's hard conversations that we need to have with one another because something's been done or something was left undone or something was out of bounds or something needs to be, someone needs to speak up. Right? When we're in the midst of those moments, if we want to love like Jesus did, then we have to learn to speak grace and truth to people like Jesus did. We have to have the same gracious spirit that he did, and we have to have the same firm call to what's right and to what's good and what is true. That's grace and that's truth. And I think these two forces, they go hand in hand. They work most powerfully, in my opinion, when they exist side by side. Again, it's not 60-40, it's not 70-30, it's not 80-20 here. These two forces work most powerfully in life and in relationship and conflict with one another when they go side by side, hand in hand. Truth and grace. See, truth, if we kind of look at these on their own, truth is a really good thing. We need more people in the world today who aren't afraid to speak truth, to speak what is right. But truth without grace, folks, is harsh. And it's mean, and it can be hurtful, right? And I think Christians have done a lot of harm in the world by speaking a whole lot of truth, which is a good thing, but I think sometimes we can do a whole lot of harm in the world by speaking a whole lot of truth without a whole lot of grace. That's not always helpful to the cause of Jesus Christ, to the mission of the church, right? There has to be grace, and tons of it. Maybe more of it than we thought or more of it than we ever received, right? There's got to be truth, but there has to be grace. But on the flip side, right, grace without truth, right? Because these two got to go hand in hand. They're hand in hand when Jesus confronts people. Grace without truth on the other side of it, it's incomplete in some ways. It's almost, if you think about it, it's almost unnecessary. You don't need grace if there was really never a line to cross in the first place. And so thankfully, truth, what is right, what is good, what is true, that helps us to know when grace is needed, when we need to lean into one another with a gracious and a forgiving spirit. If we want to love like Jesus loved people, then we have to learn to speak grace and truth like Jesus did. That's the key. That's the script, that's the outline, that's the blueprint for every hard conversation that we need to have. And here's what I'd say, here's what I have often said to every person that has come to me, called me, come to my office with these kind of conflicts or hard conversations. Here's what I've said every time about this, about speaking, grace and truth to people who are trying to, find a way forward with. That when we speak truth and grace to one another, it doesn't guarantee the outcome that we're hoping for. It doesn't guarantee that things will go exactly the way that we wanted them to. It doesn't guarantee that things will go according to the plan that we had. But here's the thing, when we speak grace and truth, it does guarantee that we can be confident, that we can be at peace, that we can be sure of the way that we have conducted ourselves, that we have handled ourselves, the way that we have taken part in whatever kind of conflict or conversation or relationship we're having. When we speak grace and truth, it might not turn out like we want it to or hoped we would, but we can be confident of the way that we have taken a step in the middle of that conversation when we've done so with grace and with truth. So then as I close here and start to wrap this up, let me just do this. Let me ask you three simple, basic questions for you here this morning. Number one would be this. Who in your life, maybe it's right now, I mean, who in your life do you need to or are you having a hard conversation with right now? Is there someone? Is there some kind of hard conversation? Is there some kind of conflict? Is there some kind of tension in a relationship in your life with someone somewhere? Who in your life right now is someone where some kind of hard conversation might need to happen? Second question is this, what truth do they need to hear? What do you want to say to them? What do you wish you could say that you feel is the truth about whatever is happening between you? And then number three, how will you extend them grace? How will you share whatever it is that you need to share? How will you do it with grace? I think those are three questions that we need to ask ourselves as we walk out of here. And we can unpack it. We'll start with the first question, this question of who is it? Right? Well, where is it that you need to have some kind of a hard conversation? Where is it that there's some kind of conflict, some kind of tension in a relationship of yours? Where is it that there's conflict or tension or anxiousness or uneasiness? Right? Maybe, this is what I was kind of saying at the beginning, maybe it's a spouse. Maybe after some years now, there's some unspoken or there's some unresolved tension. And if you're honest, you notice that the gap is widening between you two. Maybe the resentment is building. Maybe the last argument, the last fight is still lingering, and neither knows how to move forward. Maybe it's a friendship, a close friendship of yours. Maybe some things were said or some things were done that were just kind of hurtful. They were just kind of confusing at the time. No one's ever really said anything about it. Nobody's really addressed, you know, kind of what took place. But if you're looking at it, you realize, no, we've just kind of drifted apart. No one's ever really said anything. No one's ever really talked about what happened. We actually just don't talk to each other a ton anymore. Right? When we see each other around town, it's kind of awkward now because we've never said anything. We've never addressed what happened. Right? Maybe it's with your young kids. Maybe it's with your grown kids. Right? You're feeling trapped. There's something that you wish you could say. There's something you wish they would hear. There's something that you wish you could say to them or just bring up to them, but you don't want to jeopardize your relationship with them. You don't want to risk losing them or cutting ties with them. Maybe you have a coworker or an employee, right? Maybe you manage a lot of people. You've got a big team, and maybe you've got a coworker. Maybe you've got an employee who just isn't hacking it. Right, and you're on their team, or you're working on the project with them, or you're running their performance review, or maybe worse, maybe you're the one that's, got the task of making a change, and you're asking yourself, man, how do you do this? How do you do this with love? I mean, how do you say what's true, and how do you do it with love? You're asking yourself, man, how do I have this hard conversation? How do I address this kind of issue right here? It starts to feel impossible. Maybe it's a neighbor. We've kind of laughed about this. Maybe it's a neighbor in the neighborhood. Maybe it's a teacher. Maybe it's a boss. Maybe it's a client. Maybe it's someone in a small group of yours, if you're involved in that. Maybe someone who's under your care, your mentor to them. Maybe it's someone that you're in a close relationship with. You're trying to figure out, man, how do I say this? How do I speak up? How do I bring this up without cutting off our relationship? So who is it for you? Or who might it be for you? And once that's clear, just ask yourself really simply, what do they need to know? I mean, what's true? What do you feel like inside you wish you could say? What needs to be said in this moment? It just be cut and dry. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. Maybe it's just saying, hey, that was hurtful. Maybe it's saying, I think I disagree. Maybe it's saying, hey, I don't think that's what's best for you. Maybe it's saying, I don't think that's God's best for you. Maybe it's saying, I wish you would reconsider. Maybe it's saying, hey, your work in the last few months, it hasn't been what we needed it to be. You're going to say it like it is. You might think you're helping, but I don't think you're often doing anybody any favors when you don't tell them fully what they need to know. Right? When you don't just tell them what is true, you're actually just making things harder, making things awkward. This happened to me and Erica, if I just sidestep for a moment here. In the early days when we were, kind of casting vision, sharing our hearts with people to jump onto this church that we were starting to form, we had a young couple reach out to us. They reached out to us saying, hey, we'd love to hear what's happening. And we were ready to talk to anybody, literally. If you had a heartbeat, we were like ready to talk to you in the early days. Okay, so they reached out to us, and we said, okay, yeah, we would love to get together with you guys and talk about what we're doing here. And they said, okay, we're teachers, And so if we could wait to the end of the school year, that would be really great. And then we'd love to talk to you then. We said, okay, cool, we can wait. You better believe, you know, we had a little note on our calendar that said, school year's over. Okay, so we followed up with them. And there was, it was like, it didn't happen real quick. There was kind of some hesitancy. We're trying to figure out how to make this deal happen. And then finally, we got together with our families, and it was just weird. Not a whole lot of interest, not a whole lot of like conversation about what we were doing, and we finally started realizing, I think they're, you know, kind of have found a place and plugged in somewhere, which was all good. But after the fact, as we started to talk about it, we realized that in the months that, in the time between when they said, hey, we'd love to talk, and when we actually talked, they had kind of found their way. They had gotten into a place that they wanted to be, and we realized they just couldn't say it to us. That they could never actually just say what was true. And so it kind of led us through this weird, awkward conversation, trying to like, I don't know what's happening here. All that to say, sometimes you're doing more harm when you're not actually just saying what's true, what needs to be said, and what needs to be heard. Okay, so speak truth to people in your life. It's hard, yes, absolutely it is. Probably hard for this young couple. I get that, right? How do we say this? Okay, we actually don't want to meet with you anyway, right? It's hard. But it's the first part of having hard conversation. It's the first part of having these kind of conversations and addressing these kind of things in our lives. We got to speak truth to them, and then we got to do it with grace. And the question for you to ask yourself is, man, how will I speak what's true? How will I speak what's true and ensure at the same time that it is absolutely full of grace? How do I say what I need to say? And this might take time, right? But you got to ask yourself, how do I say what I need to say and ensure that it is full of grace at the same time, right? When Jesus told the woman, when he said, I don't condemn you, that word condemn, it actually means, to be punishing, you know, someone or something, right? That it would mean that someone had done something, you know, kind of so awful, so out of bounds, so whatever, that it was worthy of punishment. I mean, sometimes severe punishment. And so when you speak truth, you've got to take time to figure out, how do I say this? How do I speak what's true without punishment? Jesus took his time. He's calm, he's collected, he's doodling around in the sand in front of him. Maybe, like I said, gathering his thoughts, figuring out how he's going to speak truth and grace to this woman. I think we need to take the same approach. Got to take enough time, enough thought, enough prayer so we can speak what's true to people in our lives. We can speak what's true to people who we have conflict with without punishing them. Right? Without just causing unnecessary hurt, without cutting them down, without cutting ties, without jeopardizing any relationship that you have or any trust that you've built. How do you speak truth without punishing people? If we want to love like Jesus, then we have to learn to do this well like Jesus, to speak grace and truth like he did. And here's what I'd say as we really do just bring this to a close, right? When we do this, when we start to learn how to, we start to practice more speaking grace and truth in our lives. When we do this, I think more of our relationships will start to flourish. I think more of our friendships, more of our marriages, more of our communities and our neighbors and neighborhoods and all that stuff, I think more of these kind of relationships will start to thrive in our life. I think conflict will start to become a lot less scary. It won't be so paralyzing any longer. You know, conflict and tension won't grow out of control, won't need to come out of us in all these, you know, sideways avenues. And on top of all that, I think the world around us will start to take notice, and that's a good thing. I think the unbelieving world around us needs to see some people speaking grace and truth to one another. I think more people in general need to see more people speaking grace and truth to one another. I'm not particularly a sky is falling kind of thinker, like, oh no, sound the alarm, you know, this is, everything's horrible. That's not the way that I think. But I would just say this, man, the world is getting to be, or always has been, I don't know, the world is a pretty funky place sometime. Again, I'm not a like, oh, you know, the world is over kind of thing because things are so bad. That's not me. I'm just saying, man, world can be a funky place, right? On one hand, I think the world is just continuing to be pretty mean. No mistake is unnoticed. Every error is criticized. Every misstep is broadcast instantly for all to see. Every decision is placed under the microscope for every person in the world to critique, to chime in on, to insult, to shame. Right? And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just spend 6 seconds on Facebook. Right? Every misstep, every mistake is just broadcast for all to see. Is there any ever any truth to some of the critique that people are sharing? Maybe. But man, it can be harsh and it can be mean. On the other hand, the world, if it's not getting, you know, pretty mean, if it's not downright mean, it's people are simply indifferent. So, right, whatever, anything goes. It's fine with me. Whatever works, great for you. It's great for me. It's great for you. None of my business. You do what you want to do. I'll do what I want to do. If you like it, go for it. It's fine with me, right? And I don't think either approach it gets us to where we want to be, where we need to be. I don't think either leads to a very good place, so I think we need to land in a different spot. And here's what I'd say. I think that the world needs to see followers of Jesus leading the way. I mean, I'd love to think that the Mid-Current Church and those of us here could be leading the way, to be people who speak grace and truth like Jesus, right? I think we need to land in another spot, and I think followers of Jesus need to lead the way. We're certainly, hear me very clearly, we're certainly not the only people in the world, not even close. We're not the only people, followers of Jesus, who are capable of carrying ourselves this way, who are capable of speaking what is true and extending grace to one another. Absolutely not. That's not, we don't have a monopoly on speaking truth and being gracious people. But I still think, man, let's lead the way. We've got the greatest example from the greatest man who offered the greatest kind of love, who offered the greatest kind of grace and truth that we could have ever asked for. So let's lead the way. Let's be people, let's be marriages, let's be families, let's be friends, let's be a church that leads the way in speaking grace and truth to the world around us, speaking grace and truth into the conflict, into the tension, into the hard conversations that we're having in our lives. If we're not doing that right now, if it's not the case for us right now that we're people who are doing that well, then let's start now. We'll start trying to learn how to do this more and more, and we'll start to learn along the way, little by little. Little by little, we'll start to learn to love like Jesus loved. That's my hope. That's my prayer for me, for you, for this church, and for the world around us, that we would start to learn more and more to love like Jesus did. Let me pray for us. God, thanks for this chance to open up your word and to learn from it, to uncover so much there. God, to uncover so much truth there. We're just grateful for the chance to do that. God, we're grateful for what we learned, for what we see. We're grateful for the example that we see from your son Jesus, for the way that he lived his life, for the way that he engaged people, God, and for the way that he loved so incredibly well, God. We want to do that. We want to love well too, God. Our world, I think, is desperate to see and to experience more love around us, God. Maybe some of us are desperate to experience more love in our own lives, in our own relationships, God. And so I'm grateful for this little glimpse, God, this little short story that gives us such a beautiful picture of how we can love people so well and love people like Jesus did and love like Jesus in a way that's so, you know, stunning, so captivating, so just irresistible in a way, God. I pray that that would be true for every one of us here, that God, we would lead the way, our families and our relationships, and that this church, God, in this area, in this region, might be a place that leads the way in speaking truth and grace into people's lives, speaking truth and grace into the community and into the world around us. God, would you help us to do that? Would you help us to know who? Would you help us to know where? Would you help us to know how we do these things that we've been talking about? God, would you be crystal clear to us, God, when we ask, when we pray, would you help us to know who and how and where and we do these things, God. We're asking for your help in this, and we're asking that, God, more people would know of your love for them because of the way that we conduct ourselves each and every day and in each and every relationship that we have, God. We want you to receive all the glory and all the honor because of the results of the way that we exist in relationship and because of the way that we love well those around us, God. So that's our prayer, and we ask for help in doing these things, and we do pray all these things in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.